Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the fourth edition of the Triple Wing Hammer Report, and I want to thank all of you for tuning in tonight, and especially, you know, I thought last week was a good week, but this week, all the good words that everyone had to see, I got many reports that a lot of you like the show and keep up the good work, and trust me, whatever I need to do to serve you to get the word out about wings, about being a winger, you know, I'm more than welcome to do it. We call it the Triple Wing Hammer Report because I believe that any offense with a wing is potent and dangerous. You got all these other offense up there, but more consistent, especially at the high school and youth level, anything with a wing is dangerous. And what we want to do is bring people on the show that have built great programs using wing tee, using double wing, using single wing, all these people to come in and just talk about what their program and what being a wing has made, has done for them and their program. A couple of announcements before we get going here with our guest tonight. Again, the standard announcement, the National Single Wing Coach Association, which will be held June 28th through the 26th in Dumfries, Virginia. That's going to be going on, and I'm going to post that website. But if you go to the National Single Wing Coaches Association and just Google that, you'll come up with their website, and it'll give you all the information you need to get registered. And again, people, it's only $25 for, you know, for an individual coach. And if you want to get your staff there, it's $50 for the entire staff. I mean, you can't beat that anywhere. And you'll hear such great coaches there: Travis Connors, Derek Miner, Mickey Thompson, Sean O, and our guest last week, Corey Parker. And they'll all be speaking. You thought Corey was good last week. You wait till you see this young man live. You feel and you see the passion coming out of him, and pretty good speaker too. And so try to make plans to get there. Again, it's not a cost, people. It's an investment and get into your program. And we all know it's in programs have kids in them, and really it's an investment into your kids, because you do want your kids to get better at what they do. This winter, we got the Single Wing Conclave in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. And those dates, they're March 6th and March 7th of next year. And Todd Bross, who does a great job in organizing that, you can get a hold of him. And as the time goes by, and he'll get you up to speed as to what that's all about. And again, the what you get from those things, people, is so great. I mean, the bonding of people and the friends that you meet, and these are friends for life, because you are there for a common cause, and that's to get better at what you do. From talking to Harold Strauss, and let me give a big shout out to Harold. Harold had surgery this past week, and I talked to him yesterday. He had to get a new hip, and talked to him yesterday, and my goodness, he was about to get in the car, go see his grandson do something. So he's doing well. He said that he's trying to get rid of the walker, but he said he's doing good. But the reason I bring Harold up. He gave us books the other day, and I've read them all now. I just took my time and just read them, and probably gonna go back and reread them. But The Season of Life by Jeffrey Marks, great book. The Butterfly Effect by Andy Andrews. Inside Out Coaching by Joe Ehrman, and a book that I love and I'm suggesting that you read is Good to Great by Jim Collins. These are four great books to read, and it puts a whole different perspective on building relationships and things that you need to do as far as building programs and everything. And sometimes we get too caught up in the X's and O's and not worried and not too much concerned about the relationships that you have. And these books will put you on a path, I think, to building not only a program, but with great X's and O's and everything, a great athlete, but a program of building relationships along the way. Any suggestions, again, that you may have as far as coaches to bring on the broadcast, and you know in your areas building great programs, being a winger, let me know. We'll get them on here in the New York Second to talk about this program, and don't be shy. If you have done something great with your program, let us know. We'll get you on here. We're going to be here every Sunday night, and we need at least 52 people. So let me know so we can get you on the radio show so that you can brag about your program. The other thing is, again, any kids that you have who's doing something special, like scholarship, player of the year, things like that, or if you got a kid who just made honor roll, all A's in school, academic is very important, let us know so we can give him a shout-out. And if you as a coach have gotten a job, a head coaching job, or basically a coordinator job or whatever, let us know, because we want to give us a shout-out. We have to break this this misnomer in our what we do is thinking that we're not preparing people for school, for college, the next level, because we are wingers, and which we all know is totally not true at all. So let me know. Just email me at chang40@gmail.com. That's chang40@gmail.com, and trust me, I'll get it up and I'll let people know. one other thing. We have, let me tell you about the upcoming guests. I am so tickled to death. I mean, I am fired up because got one of the guys who I admire so much in this in the coaching profession, and some of the things that he does beyond coaching. But we'll get into that later. But some of the people we're going to be bringing on for the next 6 or 7 weeks, you know, you are going to learn a lot about Wing by the people we bring on. And you know, these guys are going to come out here and they're going to spill their guts of how they build their program. And if you got questions, specific questions for them, either email them to me or call. You can call in and ask questions. I mean, we're not shy. You want to talk, we'll get you in. But the guests we have coming up, such as over the next 6-7 weeks, Rick Darlington from Apopka High School, Tim Murphy from Clayton Valley High School, Steve Kalani up there in Connecticut, Mark Bliss over there in Ozark High School in Missouri, Pat Murphy from Montana, and Dave Caesar from Missouri. I think Dave is from Missouri. These are the people that we'll be bringing on the next 6 or 7 weeks. So you, if you want to learn, if you've got questions, and if you want to talk to these guys, because sometimes we go and we can't get a hold of these guys, they are going to be on it where you can ask specific questions to them and be able to talk to them and to whatever you want to know. They'll be here for you and everything. Okay, so those are the announcements that we have. And before I bring our guests on, I don't think Coach White needs any introduction to the old heads, but some of the new guys. We're just going to let Coach tell you about himself when we bring him on. But in honor of Coach, I want to play this for him. So just hang on for a few minutes while we honor Coach, okay?
Oh, more work for the undertaker, another little job for the casket maker. In the local cemetery, they are very, very busy with a brand new grave. No hope for harvest. No bingo, that's the lingo. Eli is bound to begin. There's to be a victory, so watch the team begin. Bingo, bingo, Harvard's team cannot prevail. Fight with all your might for bingo, bingo.
In honor of you, Coach Hugh, White, are you there?
I'm here, Coach. A couple of questions. Where did you find that music, and where did they find those singers? I've heard those songs before, but I've never heard those versions.
You seem to be breaking up on me, Coach. Let me see if I can pull something in here. You still there?
Okay. Yeah, I'm still here,
yeah,
Coach.
I got you.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Went online, and I saw that you graduated from Yale, and I was looking at something. I said, let me see if I can get this for him.
Well,
what
I
do is I'll send
you
that clip, huh?
Coach, I couldn't have taken 4 years of listening to that stuff.
Well, I hope that helped. I hope you're happy with that, okay?
Of course I am, Coach.
How
I'm
you
happy
doing
to be on with you. Oh, I'm doing great.
How you
I'm
doing
happy
tonight?
To be on with you. I'm doing great,
Well,
Coach.
I appreciate that. Yes, sir. I tell you what, nobody can be as happy as I am. You have been instrumental in every good thing that I've done. And, I really appreciate it, you know, because when I first started doing this wing thing, I think I bought everything that you did, and I emulated you and just listened, and I saw how your guys did it, and I said, well, if they can do it, we can do it to it. And I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart because you added years to my coaching career.
Well, Coach, I tell you what, it's very flattering to think that I had any influence at all on what you've done.
Well, you've done good. I'm just glad that we were able to our guys were able to just buy into everything that you've done and see that this thing worked. I'm going to allow you to tell your story. Because a lot of guys know of you, but they really don't know you. You want to kind of, in a synopsis, tell people who Coach Hugh White is.
Wow, that's a tough one, Coach. If I had to say it in one word, I'd say I'm a football coach. I'm really proud to say that. I'm proud to be called Coach. There are a lot of titles that people have that they're proud of, like general and doctor and father. And I feel that when people call you Coach, you're in that category.
And looking through your history, you didn't initially started coaching, did you?
No, I took the usual route then that was expected of an Ivy League graduate, and I got into business, and I desperately wanted to be a coach, but we had a family. We started real early in our family, and I had to get out there and make a living, and I was never able to go back and get the credits I needed in order to be able to teach, and so I thought I'd never have the chance. And so you'd have to say that I always wanted to be a coach, and I can't believe how fortunate I've been to finally wind up being a coach.
And how long have you been coaching, Hugh?
My very first coaching job was in 1970. I haven't done it continuously because there have been times when I was in management of various teams, that sort of thing. But you take a look at it now, what's it that's going on? This will be my 45th year, really, since I started coaching.
Okay. And you did some work at the professional level, if I remember correctly.
I was in at the very ground floor, on the ground floor of the World Football League in 1974. I helped sign players for a number of teams. I was the first person hired by the Philadelphia franchise, and after the league folded after that first year, it restarted in 1975, and at that time, I took a job with the franchise in Portland, and that got me across the country to the West Coast.
Okay. We got a caller on. You mind if I – he may have a question. I don't want him to hold too long, and I want to see if he has a question, if you don't mind, Coach, okay?
No, not at all.
Hello? Who
Hello?
Am I speaking with? Hello.
This is Nick. How are you, Coach?
Doing fine. How are you doing?
Good.
You have a question.
Yes, could I ask a question for Coach Wyatt?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Hello? Nick. Oh, okay. I didn't know if you could hear me. I was just curious, because I've been studying your offense or the double wing offense anyway, since 2008. And I was just curious, on a friendly question, not necessarily criticizing other other styles of double wing, but like I wonder if you could comment maybe on Steve Calandi's Good God system or some of the other popular systems that other double wing coaches are using in comparison to the system that you run.
Nick, you're right in thinking that you're not going to get me to say anything critical about what someone else is doing, because obviously other people who have different styles of double wing have had success doing that. I think the main thing that, and honestly, I really can't comment on what other people are doing simply because I haven't done them. I can only say that what I do is wing tee based, and it goes back to when I ran the wing tee and bought into the idea that Delaware had something that had been time-tested over the years against any kind of opponent, any kind of defense, and it worked for me as a wing tee coach, and so I continued using it as a double wing coach, and it's the same basic blocking system I use to this day. I hope that answers your question. I was just today talking with a fellow named Mike Lude. Coach Lude is 92 years old now, and he was one of the originators of the Delaware wing tee, and I wish I could get him on here to explain to you why he believes that it's the way to go if you're going to run a wing-based offense. But I'm not
could
gonna...
I maybe ask just a specific I mean, that was more of a general thing. Could I ask one specific question regarding blocking rules? Running the power play or super power play, if you're running power to the right, let's say with rip motion, and you have an odd front, you have, let's just say, a regular old Oklahoma 52 with a zero tech, nose guard head up, and the 2-4 techniques head up on the tackles. In the past, I know you blocked the gap on area where you didn't double the nose. You kind of waddled like the old Delaware wing tee. I've read that you don't do that anymore. Now you block gap on angle late, and now you double the nose. Is that accurate? And what made you change, if that's true?
Well, we could double the nose, but essentially you might call it a combo block. First of all, I should stop and say we don't use rip motion, and we haven't used rip motion since approximately 2000 in running superpower. So we can talk about that. We can talk about that later. But your answer, in answer to this one now, we're not going to commit immediately to double teaming that nose if our guard is uncovered, because we still have to allow for the fact that the tackle, the defensive tackle, could be coming hard on a slant, or a backside backer could be coming hard on a scrape. And so we say angle late because first that guy has to check his area. So essentially it's a gap on area assignment. And instead of saying area, we tell him come down at an angle, but come late. Take a jab step to make sure that your area is not threatened. Does that help you?
Yes, yes, yes. Okay. Thank you very much, Coach. I really appreciate it. And early, particularly on, I'm an offensive coordinator in New Jersey. It'll be our first year running the double wing. We are going to run Steve Calandi's style. However, early on in my career, when I was a ninth grade freshman offensive coordinator, I studied your stuff extensively, and I still do. And many of your stuff helped me get to where I am today. So I really want to thank you for that.
Good luck to you, Coach. And email me if I can ever help.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
You bet. Good luck.
Thank you for your call, sir. Okay. Coach, well, you know, I should have got him because he was the first caller we've ever had. I may want to give him a present, a gift or something.
Give him his own show.
Boy. Yeah. you have coached at a lot of places, and you have been super successful. You've been moderately successful. What's your key to building these programs?
I think the key to building any program is establishing a culture where you can work. It's something that I learned as a school teacher, and that is that you're never going to get anywhere in that classroom if you don't have a good teaching atmosphere, if you don't have a climate where the kids understand that they're going to be respected, they're free to ask questions without being ridiculed, they're going to learn how I don't want to use the word piss me off, but they have to understand right from the start the things that are going to set me off. And I think if I let kids know what those things are, they're not going to do them. And so we have an atmosphere where they can learn and they can feel that they're not threatened by the fact that they don't learn, they don't know. I think that's the number one thing. Wherever you go, I think you have to set up an atmosphere where even if you lose, you can lose as a team and people aren't pointing fingers and you don't come apart at the seams. Any team can stay together when you're winning, but you are going to lose. It happens. It's inevitable. And you have to make sure that you still have a football team and you don't come apart at the seams when you lose a game.
You had a lot of different kind of players. You've had gifted athletes, and you've had some good ones. Would you say that you have turned programs around with the not-so-gifted athletes? This offense has helped you that much?
I don't think it's so much the athlete as it is establishing that culture of helping kids understand that they can be better than they are. Most of the places where I've gone in, and if you want to use the term turn things around, I found that things were kind of in a shambles. It was kind of chaos. And as much as anything, they needed some order brought to the whole thing. I think running something like the double wing or the wing tee helps that way because it's a system offense, and there's some order to it, and it helps you bring order to the whole thing.
Did you never serve in the military, did you?
No, I didn't, as a matter of fact, and that was largely because even though there was a draft when I got out of college, I was married and already had one child, our son, and then we had another one shortly after. But I've worked very closely with people in the military. I have many good friends who've been in the military. I'm kind of, I guess you'd say, I'm an honorary member of the Army Football Club, the Army Letterman's Association, and the military and the way it operates influences my thinking quite a bit.
And you, let me see if I got this. There's an award that you give, if I'm reading this correctly, if I read it correctly, the Black Knight, I think that's what it is.
It's called the Black Lion Award, and it
Black Lion.
Basically, yeah, I was inspired by the story of, well, first of all, I was inspired by Colonel Blake, Earl Blake, who was the coach at Army back in the 1940s and 50s. I read his biography when I got started coaching, and I said, you know, this is amazing, the stuff this guy has gone through. And without having any mentor myself, I almost used his experience as he was my mentor. And he devoted a chapter to a story of a young man named Don Hollander, who was an All-American end as a junior. But before his senior year, the coach went to him and said, you have to play quarterback. I need a leader. I'm not satisfied with the people we have. He said, Coach, I've never played in the backfield in my life. I've never thrown a pass. And he said, it doesn't matter. I need the leadership. Now, those, Coach, you probably remember those days. Those were the days when the quarterback really was a field general. He was the coach on the field. Coaches couldn't send in plays. And so the quarterback was very important. And he made a quarterback out of Don Hollander, but it was not easy. Things didn't go well. They lost a few games they shouldn't have. They were highly criticized. Army was a very high-profile team back then. And so he went to the coach and said, Coach, if you don't want me to do this, I know the criticisms that you're getting. If you don't want me to do this, I'll step aside. And the coach just said to him, you are my quarterback. And the upshot of it was they won the Army game, or the Navy game, rather. It was a huge thing then. They won it without completing a pass the entire game. And he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated for that. And I thought, this is a fantastic story. This guy just gave up All-American honors. He was sure to be a repeat the next year for the good of his team. And then I happened to be reading an article years later now about a battle in Vietnam in which this young guy, Don Hollander, was killed going to the rescue of soldiers, members of the Black Lions, the 28th Infantry. And I thought, what an amazing thing. Twice in his life, he did something for the team. He put himself out there for the team. And the second time he did it, he was killed. He was a true hero. And I wrote something about this, published on my website, and I'll be a son of a gun. Within a couple of days, I heard from a general, a retired general who had identified Don Hollander's body. I heard from another man who had been a medic, who the Major Hollander died in his arms. And I said, this is amazing. And I talked to these guys, and I said, what would you guys think about an award that recognized young men that sacrificed for the team, that put their team first? They were leaders. They were inspirational. They were tough, but they put their team first, totally unselfish. And they said, that would be great. And they then went through the Army channels getting approval. We had to get approval from Major Hollander's widow. And eventually, after people at West Point checked me out to make sure I wasn't trying to make money off this thing, they gave it their approval. And an Army chose to present this award every year to one of their players. So since then, that was the year 2001 that we got started. And, we're going strong since. We have youth players and middle school coaches and high school coaches all over the United States who participate in the Black Lion Award. There's no charge. We present a certificate and a patch, a 28th Infantry patch, a Black Lion on the white background. That it's presented free to the winner at every school.
You had a dilemma at West Point this year, where you had five or six guys.
Well,
was it this year?
That's what the nomination was, but as it turned out, I think basically the former coach decided that he couldn't be troubled picking one, but they have a new coach in there, a new sheriff in town, and he got things straightened out real quickly, and I was on hand at West Point 2 weeks ago when they made the award. They made the award to Richard Glover. He's a nose guard from Katy, Texas, down near Houston. And I couldn't be more impressed with this kid. He's a tough dude. You know, you're going to play nose guard for Army, you're going to be a tough dude. But he's also majoring in mechanical engineering.
Yeah, that's fantastic there, I tell you. Lots of guys are innovating with the double wing, Coach. But when I go back and look through your material, you did this years ago. You did this. And you want to tell people the story about the Wildcat. And then we'll get on to some other things here.
As coaches will do, I was talking with some coach back in Virginia. It was the fall of '97, and he said he knew a guy that was running something that resembled a single wing, but his tailback wasn't very far back, and he was side by side with his fullback. And I said, that sounds pretty good to me, because we had run some single wing the year before. And, boy, I had a tailback. He was a heck of a kid. He was about 6'3", 200 pounds. He could run like a deer. And I figured, this guy needs to carry the ball every play. But five times in one game, my center snapped the ball over his head. Here's a kid 6'2", 6'3", and they're snapping it over his head. I said, I think I'm going to have to get away from that single wing, that those fantasies of running that. And then I heard about this guy that said, look, he's real close behind the center. He's down real low. The center just snaps the ball real soft and easy. Couldn't even knock over a beach chair if you put the thing on the ground. And I said, hey, that sounds pretty interesting. And we went out the next day. That was a Sunday night. We went out on Monday, and I got the guys there and said, hey, look at this. We're going to take the quarterback, and instead of having him under center, we're going to move him back here, and we'll move our fullback, our B-back, over next to him, and nobody will know who we're going to snap the ball to. Let's try this and run a couple plays. And we ran a couple plays, and it went smooth as silk. And one of the kids said, hey, what are you going to call this thing? I said, well, I don't know. What should we call it? Some kids said, well, we're the Wildcats. Maybe we should call it the Wildcat. And I said, okay, it's the Wildcat. And then we did it the next day, and the kids started saying, hey, Coach, are we going to run this Friday night? And I said, I don't know. And by Wednesday, it was looking so good. I said, okay, guys, we'll run it. We'll run it on Friday night. Friday night, we had a game down at the coast. Don't know what you know about the Pacific Coast, the Northwest Coast in the wintertime or the fall, but it can rain. The field was horrible. It rained. And even under those bad conditions, we wound up hanging in there against a team we had no business beating, and we beat them in overtime. And the next week, we played a game against a bigger school right here in the town where I live, Camas, and we waxed them doing this stuff. And I said, fellas, we're on to something. And so ever since then, it's been a component of our offense. Only this past year did we go 100% to the Wildcat Exchange.
And you have done some more stuff that I like to call them innovations. Do you want to tell us some of the things that you're doing? Let me ask you one question before we get there. You coached at Portland State at one time, didn't you?
No, I didn't coach at Portland State. I was their TV guy. So, you know, I really got to know those guys. They were amazing people. The head coach was a guy named Pokey Allen, who wound up moving on to Boise State after that and took them to the national finals in Division I AA. But they had an offensive coordinator named Al Borges, who's been all over the place. He was at Michigan. He was at with Brady Hoke at San Diego State before that. They had a defensive coordinator named Tom Mason, who's now the defensive coordinator at SMU. They had a fantastic staff. So I really did get a chance to learn quite a bit of football just from being around those guys.
Okay. Okay. You weren't there when Mouse was there, were you?
No.
Mouse
Davis. I was coaching high school here when Mouse Davis was coaching at Portland State, and he influenced me the same as he influenced all coaches in this Portland area to get into the run and shoot. And I ran some of the run and shoot. I never got into it to the extent, obviously, that he did or some of the hardcore guys, but that had a real big influence on some of the stuff that we did just this past year, going back into the past and dredging up some of that run and shoot stuff. It's still good.
So you're starting to get you are what I like to say, what you call it too. You're marrying the two together. You're marrying wing and run and shoot together now. Is that where you're going now?
Well, that's fair enough. We have the wing, and we're not in any way giving up the blocking principles. Nothing changes in the interior line. But we are using some run-and-shoot passing principles because there are times when any team has to pass, and I didn't want to be in a situation where I had to pass from a double-tight, double-wing set. And so the run-and-shoot and some of the run-and-shoot principles, the choice pattern, the go pattern, the gangster pass, that sort of thing, some of those things that are as old as Mouse Davis or even Tiger Ellison, the inventor of this offense, way before him. Some of these things, they still work, believe me.
And how did it go for you this past year?
We had a really good year. We were 7-3. I thought we should have gone 8-2, but you know we made some mistakes in one of our games. But the two teams we lost to two good teams, and then we lost another one we shouldn't have. But 7-3 was only our school's second winning season in 10 years. So. You know, we think we had a good season, and we're set up, I think, to have an even better season this year.
One question somebody asked me to ask you, and I'm going to ask you right now. How did you become a winger? What got you into this offense?
That's a very good question. I grew up in the Philadelphia area, and so I knew about Delaware. I had a teammate go to Delaware, and he started 4 years there, so I knew all about their offense and how good it was, but, you know, I kept looking at that thing, and I said, I can't coach this. I can't figure out this first number is the series and second number is the formation or the – no, first number is the formation, second is the series, third number is the point of attack, and, you know, you go right to left. And I couldn't figure that stuff out, and I figured if I can't figure it out, I can't teach it. And we started running Mouse Davis's stuff and developed a way of making sure that we could run misdirection and our fullback would never crash into one of our running backs. And so we figured if we can control where this fullback goes, we're going to be able to run all kinds of misdirection stuff, and that's what the wing tee is all about. So we had good success running. In fact, we had better success running the ball than passing the ball from our run-and-shoot formation, and after a couple years of this, I started thinking, you know, if we really want to run misdirection, why don't we go right to the people that know it best, and that's the Delaware people, and I got in touch with them, and I bought some film from them, some old 16-millimeter film that I still have, and I looked at that stuff, and I got back to their offensive coordinator, who at that time was a guy named Ted Kempsky, and I said, could we run the Delaware wing tee from our double spread run and shoot formation? He said, well, you could, but you wouldn't be able to run the down play. That's what we call the G play. you have to have a tight end to do that. And I looked at the thing and I said, eh, if we're going to run this stuff, let's do it the way Delaware does it. And that was 1983, and I guess it's fair to say I've been a winger ever since.
And you got into the double wing how?
I got into the double wing. Well, we always ran a double wing as part of our series. That was our tight formation, and we'd get into that. Often we'd get into it when we wanted to run the clock out at the end of the game. We'd run wedges. We'd run off tackle. Occasionally we'd do a little bit of play action. But I was over in – I was coaching in Finland. I'm going to say it was the summer of 88 maybe, and we went up against Don Markham's team. Don Markham was coaching a team from – Helsinki, the capital city, and I was coaching a bunch of guys up in a town up in the sticks. They were such a good team, they actually had two coaches. They had a defensive coach and an offensive coach. We had one coach, and that was me, the only American in town. And we got handled pretty well by those people. And basically, they were doing it. They had a good running back named Mike Kane from Cal State Fullerton. And all they were doing was running off tackle right, off tackle left, with an occasional trap, occasional counterplay, but mostly just running off tackle with the quarterback tossing. And said, you know, I've got to take a look at this stuff. And you know, we filmed each other up there, and I got some film of them. And I said, hey, this wouldn't be difficult at all for us to incorporate that into what we're doing. What it meant, of course, was running double wing most of the time. But with the guys I had in Finland, there was no sense splitting a guy out anyhow. We couldn't throw to him, and nobody would bother covering him. So we stayed double tight, had some success with it, came back to the United States and had some success with it. In addition to running our regular wing T stuff, what we called superpower worked in fine. We already had a power play, so I called it superpower to indicate that the quarterback was going to be, instead of handing off, he was going to be tossing the ball and leading through. And it worked beautifully. I don't put myself on a par with Coach Markham, because Coach Markham, as far as I'm concerned, is the guy that made that thing work with the double wing. And it's a great play. It's a play. It's a statement play of the double wing. For us, a statement play is a play that people know they have to stop. One is superpower, one is wedge, one is counter.
Are you still there, Coach?
Yeah, I'm there, Coach. You hearing me?
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I hear you now, yeah.
Okay, great.
I don't know why I'm having so much audio problems tonight, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Did you catch that last part, though, where we're talking about the statement plays?
No, you mind going ahead repeating that? I didn't hear it.
No, I was just saying that, you know, the superpower gave us a good off-tackle play, because I've always felt that one problem with the wing tee is that it's a great misdirection offense, but it's really a finesse offense. It's not a beat people up offense, but superpower gives it that power off tackle that also makes it a power offense.
Mm-hmm. You have a change, but would you mind taking the listeners through the progress of where you come from back then running base to base double wing to where you are right now, and where should a young guy start? Where should someone who is just starting this offense, where should he start?
Let me answer that last question first, Coach, because that's a really good one. Now, I think the biggest problem with most young guys is they want to do too much. You know, our ability as coaches to come up with schemes far exceeds our kids' ability to learn them. And I think one of the beautiful things about a pure double wing, where you're going to run, say, a power play right and a power play left, a wedge up the middle, a counter each way, and a rollout pass each way, it's really all you need. And if you'll stick with that and continue teaching those things and making the corrections that are necessary, you'll be a far better team at the end of the season than if you continually introduce new plays and discard old plays and build up your war chest with a whole bunch of plays that none of which your kids can run right. So my advice would be keep that thing much simpler than you think you need to be you'll be surprised at how much better you'll be if you don't overload your kids. Now, where we've gotten with this thing, without trying to desert the things that we believe in, we've been able to run from a variety of formations over the years. I've always been a big believer in running unbalanced. We'll go into forms of I formation stuff. We'll split our backfields occasionally. We'll split an end out and so forth. And, of course, we'll run from wildcat and even on occasion running from single wing. But we never get away from our basic blocking principles up front. I don't want to confuse our offensive linemen. I figure if those guys can learn to block against anything they see up front, we can do all kinds of tricky stuff back behind them, but the offense doesn't change as far as I'm concerned.
You do severe angle blocking, or you double team? How do you approach the line blocking? I know there are many different ways to do it. What's your approach to line blocking?
Well, we approach it with rules basically, Coach. And so if we're going to run, say, a counter play, the first thing we think about is our tackle and our play-side tackle, and our play-side tackle has to determine whether he's got a tight end next to him or whether he doesn't. If he has a tight end next to him, the first thing he's going to do is if he has a man on him, he's going to post up because we're going to be double-teaming with that tight end. If he doesn't have a tight end on him, then the first thing he's going to do is block down. So basically, what we tell this guy is we tell him that he's going to, if he's got a man in his gap, he's going to block a man in his gap. If he's got a man on him, he's going to post up if there's a tight end there. And if neither applies, then he's going to come down at an angle. We call that GPA, gap, post up, angle. And it really all starts there. And so we don't tell him to worry about whether it's a five-man line or a four-man line or whether it's odd or even or anything like that. What's going on in your immediate area? What's going on right there? And since these guys are so tight together, then they're not going to have any such thing as a man in the gap and a man on them. There's just not room for a guy to be in your gap and also on you. So we'll say gap, post up, angle. That might be the same as gap on angle, except we don't worry about a man on us unless there's a tight end next to us. Now, I don't know whether that confuses you, but we'll run a counter. We'll use that blocking not only to the tight end side, but also to our open side where we don't have a tight end.
Well, it doesn't confuse me because we use one blocking scheme for every play we do. The main thing is not to get those babies up front confused, because once the linemen get confused, you're in for a long night. You know, so we just use one blocking scheme for everything, and we adjust from there.
Something else that we've worked into. I'm sorry, Coach. Something else that we've done over the years, and that is, I'm going to say it was about 2003 or so, a fellow from Wisconsin came to my clinic and he talked to me about a play calling system that he used with wrist coaches, putting wrist coaches on every player, and this way, not only was he able to get the plays in accurately, but also if they wanted, they could go no huddle, and they always went no huddle in practice, so they saved themselves an awful lot of time. And I immediately jumped on this one. You know, I know a good idea when I see one, and I said, I'm going after that one. So are you there, Coach?
I'm here, yes, uh-huh.
Okay, great.
Yeah,
so
I hear you.
From there, we've evolved to where we not only on the player's card, we not only put on there what play it is, but we put his assignment on there. So we've gone past the point of expecting players to memorize their assignments on plays. I'm not going to waste time with that one. My job is to make sure that don't have good memories. So we put his assignment right on the card. So if we say we want to call 88 superpower, and he looks on the card, we say 10-1, and he looks at 10-1 on his card, and it says 88 superpower GPA. He knows that we're running 88 superpower, and his assignment on this play is gap, post up, angle. And it seems to work well for us.
We are going to that system this year also. So what do you you do a lot of up-tempo or no-huddle stuff?
Only in practice, Coach. We don't do much of it in games simply because those same kids that we're running their tails off on offense, they're going to have to play defense too. So I think they're...
You can't get them too tired, huh?
Well, no, it's the same reason we don't use the kind of motion that we normally use on run and shoot. You know, run and shoot originally was predicated on the fact that you'll take this wing back on the left, let's call him the A-back, and you send this guy in long motion, and you take a look and you see how the defense adjusts to his motion and all that. And I started thinking, wait a minute, this kid's going to be doing an awful lot of running just so I can find out what kind of coverage they're in. Let's just put the guy over there in the first place and say, spare him the running. So we do that. But in answer to your question, we are exclusively no huddle in practice, and we'll do a lot of hurry-up stuff in practice because I think you waste an awful lot of time getting in and out of huddles in practice that could be devoted to reps.
I ask this questions of all the guys I've had on the show and everything. Do you have an issue with kids being leaders on your team? How do you build that? What do you do in your program to build leaders?
It's very interesting you mentioned this. We try to do the whole – first of all, it's not something you can just do on a one-year basis. Kids have to have leadership modeled for them by other players. So I think if you go in right away, first year, you might have some problems. I think one of the first things you have to do is the same thing they do at West Point, and that is they spend 3 years teaching guys to be leaders, the sophomore, the junior, the senior year, but they spend the freshman year, the plebe year, teaching them how to be followers. And I think one of the reasons why we don't get leaders nowadays is we bring these young freshmen in, and some of these kids are smart asses, and they don't want to listen to anybody, and they don't want anybody telling them what to do. And so as a result, they start lipping off to the older guys. And one of the first things we have to explain to the kids is you have to learn to listen to those guys because they've paid the price. They are not going to be harassing you or hazing you. That's our promise. They're going to treat you right, but in return, you have to give them the kind of respect that they've entitled, that they've earned on this team. And so I think it all starts there. And then when we determine what kids are comfortable with being leaders, because not all kids are comfortable being leaders, we show them, we give them a little bit of leadership. We give them responsibility as players. We will bring them in and we will consult them on certain decisions we have to make. If there's a disciplinary case or something like that, we're going to bring these kids in and we're going to ask them what they think about this, if they think this is too harsh, if they think it's not too harsh. As much as possible, we'll put decisions in the hands of the kids. But if you haven't established the proper climate to begin with, the proper climate of respect and responsibility and resilience, as we say it, the three R's, then those kids aren't really going to be prepared themselves to be leaders, because leadership, when you get right down to it, is passing along the culture of the team. This is the way we do things around here. And, of course, you have to pick a kid who's comfortable with this, and you have to pick a kid who's willing to get in the face of somebody and say, you're hurting our team, you're not doing what this team needs, you're costing our team, and we're going to have to deal with this thing if you don't shape up. And then as coaches, we have to support our leaders, because we can't have a leader say to a kid, shape up, and then undercut the leader, undercut that team leader by letting the younger guy get away with it.
Okay. Question that someone just text me. How do you game plan, Coach?
Well, unless we see something that somebody is doing that probably is going to take something away from us, or they're definitely going to give us something, We're going into a game with the same basic plan, and that is we're going to establish a base play, and we're going to see how they deal with this sort of thing. For us, a base play is going to be a fullback off tackle. It's what we call 6C or 7C in our terminology. We're going to take a look at that thing, and we're going to see what you're doing to stop that play. Then from there, it's what do we have to do to make that play viable, to make that play live, and what are you doing to stop that play that's providing us with an opportunity somewhere else? Our game plan has changed somewhat, I would say, based on the way we now approach this, because we have a wing on one side and we have an open set. We have twins on the other side. Gives us a situation now where you're either going to stack up to stop our wing, to stop the power and all the stuff we do there, the power, the G, the wedge, and so forth, or you're going to stack up to stop the stuff that we can run the other way, our crisscross and our counter and our quick passing stuff. And that's the sort of stuff we're looking at now. So game planning, I've changed slightly now because I'm going in there to see whether you're going to favor the strong side or favor the open side. The coach at Villanova is pretty good. Brian Flynn, he's a wide receiver coach at Villanova, and he's spoken at my Philadelphia clinic the last couple of years. And he said, what we're doing is a mullet. He said, we're business on one side and party on the other side. We're business to the wing side, and we're party to the slot side.
Okay. That's nice there.
That one.
Yeah, I do too. You do a lot of clinics across the country, and where I'm going at with this, how important is it for coaches to invest in their future, in their development, so that they can help themselves, not only themselves, but their kids also? How important is that to you?
Well, I think it's very important, Coach, that every person who's listening to your show come to every single one of my clinics. No, I'm just kidding, Coach. I think it's extremely important. I think a big mistake that coaches make, I think young coaches mistake, the big mistake they make is thinking that they've learned all they need to learn. Now, Coach, you've been around the track a few times, I know, and you're still going to clinics and you're still enriching yourself professionally. And, I don't think a day goes by that I don't learn something about the game of football, either, you know, what to run or how to teach it. And, I'm 75 years old, Coach, and I'm still learning this game. So I would say you can't beat clinics and talking with other coaches and approaching other coaches. Just get on the phone sometime to some coach you've never met before and give them a call. You'd be surprised how many of these guys will share their knowledge with you.
Mhm. I tell you what, you have been instrumental, and like I said before, you have been very instrumental in my development over the last 10 years. Like I say, you added 30 years to my coaching career, and I can't say enough. I'm gonna outdo you. But I. For the love of me, I'm looking at a picture right now of you when you had your clinic in Durham, and you got it with the kids and everything. I'm looking at the coaches, and as many programs that are struggling out there, including mine, I can't see that why people don't gravitate to something as simple and more powerful than the wing concept. You know, I just can't see it. I don't know what your thoughts are on it.
Well, Coach, I think there are a couple of problems. Number one is it's not sexy. You don't see it on Sundays and you don't see it on Saturdays. And honestly, you know, even a good coach like you, I'm sure that you've had people in the community complain because what you're doing, it's not preparing kids for the next level. It's not exciting. It doesn't open it up. It's not making best use of the talent of the kids and blah, 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 blah. And so I think a lot of people just aren't able to stand up to the resistance that they get.
Well, you got to have some gusto to do this thing, but I think you got to have a conviction. As we were talking about the last 3 weeks, you got to actually believe in what you do. And one of the things I think that you get to believe is you get around people who are doing the same thing you do. Thus, you got to go to these clinics. Thus, you got to get on the telephone. We need to support each other. What are your thoughts?
Oh, there's no question about it. I think the thing that amazed me was the time I went up to the single wing conclave in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. It was 2007. Todd Bross is a great guy. He came to a couple of my clinics originally, and he said that was one of the things that inspired him to put that conclave together. The fact that when he came to one of my clinics, it was Friday night, it was raining, he had driven all the way from Pittsburgh, about 6 hours, and he happened to walk into a tavern nearby where the clinic was going to be, and he saw a bunch of us in there sitting around talking football, and he said, that's what I want to do. And that's what that single wing conclave was. I was amazed at the brotherhood among these guys who were probably running 7 or 8 different brands of single wing, but it didn't matter. They were all wingers, mm-hmm. and they were all under this big tent, and they supported each other. And, you know, without that, and I got to give the Internet credit, I think without the Internet, it's possible that the single wing would have died, and it's possible that the double wing might not have spread the way it did. So we're very fortunate that we have that Internet that keeps us connected.
Well, that's how I found it, because I just Googled double wing, and all this stuff's popping up at me, and your name came up, and people's name came up, and I saw your stuff. I don't remember. I bought your stuff maybe 8 years ago, and it was fantastic. Like I said, you know, it did wonders for my career, late in my career, and I'm just forever thankful for you, Hugh, forever.
Oh,
a couple of last questions here.
Sure.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. I think it's wonderful you'll say that. It's funny you mentioned that toward the end of your career, you're saying later in your career. I think that's the big thing. And an awful lot of people that I've found have come over to the double wing have been longtime coaches that have tried everything and realized what a comfort it was, what a blessing it was to be able to do something that gave them a series offense that had most of the answers they were looking for.
Why do you continue to do this, Hugh?
Coach?
What's your burn? What's, why?
It's a passion. You used that word earlier. It's I think it was Bear Bryant that said that, you know, if you can do without coaching, then you need to get out. But I can't do without coaching. I think the interesting thing is, and I heard this from Coach Wooden, the great basketball coach, toward the end of his career, he said he didn't miss the games, but he missed the practices. And I do it because I love the practices. Yes, I love the games. They're exciting and all, but I really love the practices. I really love being out on the field with the kids and cracking jokes with them and trying to see, you know, what pushes this kid's buttons and what pushes that kid's buttons and, hey, how about we try it this way or, hey, guys, let's take a look at this and see what happens here. That's what I love.
You still there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I got to work on this audio thing on my end. You've been doing it for a long time, but you cannot do this, what you've done over the years, without a good partner. You want to talk a little bit about your wife a little bit? Because she got to be special to put up with you.
Yeah. There isn't any doubt about it. She's been very special, my wife. You know, when we went on our honeymoon, we went to some place up in the hills of Pennsylvania, and it was boring. There was nothing doing there. And I said to her, hey, are you for bailing out of here and going down to Hershey and watching the Eagles train? And she said, sure. And we just picked up and we drove down to Hershey, Pennsylvania, where the Eagles used to have their preseason, where they had their training camp. And we spent the rest of our honeymoon watching the Eagles work out. So that'll give you some idea. But this whole thing wouldn't have happened except in 1968, we were living in a town called Frederick, Maryland. I was coaching, or I was working with the National Brewing Company in Baltimore, about an hour away. I had a really good job, great job. And they started a team in the town. And I was in pretty good shape at that point. I was working out regularly, and I went and I watched them work out. And I said, shoot, I could play for these guys. It was a semi-pro team. And we did that a couple nights, and finally my wife said, look, I'm telling you right now, he says, if you're going to play, you better get your butt out there and play, because I'm not going to listen to you whine all season long how you should have played. And that got me going in that thing, and that got me going playing the minor league ball. And after a couple of years of that, a guy hired me to be his general manager and coach, and away we went from there. She's put up with times when we basically had to take the title to our car down to the bank and borrow $500 to, you know, keep things going. She knows what tough times are. She just threw me through thick and thin. She's been the greatest. Now she's been my videographer for the last 15 years and does a fantastic job of it. But I could never have done this without my wife.
Well, I know she's one special lady. I've only met her two times, but I knew when the first time I met her, she was a special one. And you are so fortunate. I mean, you need to give her a hug every day and say thank you.
Coach, I'm glad you brought that up, because I don't know of too many coaches that have been successful without good partners.
We didn't talk a little bit about this, but the last question I have for you: do you have to deal with academics in your school a lot?
We did at the very start. This is now where I'm coaching now. It's interesting. I was the head coach there 6 years ago, and I stayed there just one season for various things. Things went on that I didn't care for, administrative support, that sort of thing. But we had a good year there. And then after a couple of years, really down years, the guy who had been my middle school coach said, I'm putting in for the job. He called me and he said, would you consider coming back and working for me, mentoring me? And we talked it over, and I said, yeah, I'd like to do that. And so we agreed that we were going to go in there and we were going to clamp down on the grades and the behavior and all that sort of stuff. And we finally got it to this point now where we were the outstanding academic school in our entire district, which takes in, about 100-some high schools. And we don't have that big a problem now, but I can't say we don't have a problem at all, because some kids just don't understand that they have to show up in class and they have to do what the teacher says and they have to turn in their work on time. And we stress this constantly. It's part of the deal that we go over before they even go out on the field. Before we even hit the field, we'll spend our entire first practice just going over what our expectations are with these kids. And one of those is, you know, sit in the front of the room. Don't sit in the back of the room with the knuckleheads. That's where they sit. Show the teachers that you care. Learn their names and all that sort of stuff. I can't say we don't have problems, but we only had one freshman this past year lose any time due to ineligibility. So I think we're getting a handle on it, but you never want to think you're ahead of that game. You always have to stay on top of it.
I agree with you 1,000%. Now, this year, according to you, you have a great team coming back this coming year?
Well, I think we could be pretty good. We're going to lose our quarterback now. He accounted for about 1,700 yards of offense last year and about 15, 16 touchdowns, because with the Wildcat, we were able to make better use of our quarterback, and we're losing him. He's going to a Division III school up here, a real good one, Pacific Lutheran University. And so we're going to have to find a quarterback, but otherwise we've got our runners, we've got our receivers, and we're 260 across the front. And these are all experienced kids, and there's no fat in the bunch. So, you know, that's a school with 200 boys, or 200 kids, rather.
Mm-hmm.
So we're probably the biggest offensive line in the state. And so we ought to be able to find a way to move the ball, I hope.
So are you saying that the double wing is going to bring a ring to your finger this year?
Well, I don't know that we're that good. I don't know that we're that good, but, you know. Remember, when I say that we're 260 across the front, those are our five starters. We don't have a backup. That's the way, you know, that's the way it works in a small school.
I understand.
Funny, you mentioned the importance of a wing and so forth. And of course, I'm always going to have a wing there. And I've always thought, when I worked in IBM for 1 year in business, we would record stuff on old tape, magnetic tape. And in order to record on this tape reel, you had to put some kind of a ring around the hub of the reel. And the old thing we had to remember to have that ring in there was, if it doesn't have a ring, it doesn't mean a thing. And I've always said, if it doesn't have a wing, it doesn't mean a thing.
Exactly. I agree with that 1,000,000%. I tell you, wing just caused people problems, just putting them there. He may be the smallest, the slowest, the fattest guy there, but because you got him in the wing, just caused everybody to go crazy a little bit on the other side. You know,
You're right.
You know, and I just hate that. I didn't see that years ago. But, well, Hugh, I tell you what, I really enjoyed this. You know, I'm tickled to death. You know, I enjoy this. I tell people all the time I got the best seat in the house because I get to talk to all you great guys and be able to ask you questions and everything. I really appreciate you coming on.
Well, Coach Johnson, I appreciate the opportunity to get on your show. And I want to tell you, I admire all you've done in coaching, and I admire what you're doing right now to keep this thing going.
Well, you know, I want to give back to what was given to me. And do you have any final thoughts that you want to share with anyone?
No, I would just say, guys, do whatever it takes to coach. Find people you can learn from. And if there's one thing that I would tell all young guys to do, find an old coach out there somewhere, because there's an old coach out there somewhere who would just give his right arm to be able to help you in some way, and it's amazing the knowledge that he has. Don't let that guy go to his grave and take all that knowledge with him.
Well, Hugh, well, thank you again, and we're gonna have you back on again. You know, this is not your last time, because you have so much to give back, and I learned so much from you. So I want to thank you and bid you a good night, Hugh.
Well, thank you, and good night to you too, Coach Johnson. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, man. Good night.
Good night.
Well, everyone, that's the great Hugh White, and boy, you know, it's just amazing what people are willing to give, the information and everything. You can contact Coach White at coachwhite@aol.com, and he has a website up there. Just Google it. I think it's coachwhite.com. I think that's what it is. But you can Google it to find his website and follow his blog, because it's some great reading on there. Next week, boy, we're in for a treat next week. We have the great Tim Murphy next week. Let me make sure that all you wingers out there, I mean, if you followed Tim, you know that he has done some great things with the double wing, and you know, with the school starting from when he got started. I can't even pronounce the name of the high school, but it starts with a Y. And but Tim is going to be our guest next week, and you know, and I want to thank all of you for your support and everything, because we can't do it without you. Get somebody here with you next week, and pass the word out. And God, you can't get more free information than this. And I want to tell all of you a good night, and make sure you grab somebody. Make sure you grab somebody and tell them that you love them. That's so important. Have a good night, people.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white. dogs say goodnight, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying how do you do. They're really saying I love you. I hear babies cry, I watch them grow. They're like much more than I never knew. To myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself.